Thank you, Jim. I'm going to go to the audience first for comments or questions. And Mayor Mitchell had some comments.
Thank you for inviting me, Mr. Chairman. And by the way, the mint that you've left the witnesses is really a nice treat here. I appreciate that. It's not something I've ever encountered. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the council. And and what I hope to do today is to read a brief letter into the record, and each of you will get a copy of that letter. And then I'd like to just offer couple of quick comments, and I appreciate your flexibility in affording me this opportunity. I know the schedule, Mr. Chairman, has been somewhat in flux, and I know you want to keep things on time. Yeah, as you know, on September 13, 2012, Commerce Secretary Rebecca Blank issued a fishery disaster determination for the Northeast multi-species groundfish fishery for the 2013 fishing year. The federal disaster determination was a direct result of a document released on August 2nd, 2012 by the council in NOAA that indicated that reductions ranging from 45% to 73% in FY 2013 ACLs for a number of stocks in the groundfish fishery were appropriate. As the mayor of New Bedford, Massachusetts, which was just named the nation's highest grossing fishing port for the 12th year in a row, I am extremely grateful for our congressional delegation and to Governor Patrick, Commerce Department, for the disaster determination. At the same time, however, I strongly urge you, the council, to consider additional complementary policy responses that will forestall or mitigate the forecasted cuts in ACLs and help keep fishermen fishing. Press proposed ACLs and other conservation measures in the coming days and weeks. I ask that you refrain from making decisions in which the reliability of the underlying science is in question. It is imperative that members have confidence in the scientific grounds for their decisions, given the potential deleterious economic and social consequences of those decisions. The economic and human stakes of your upcoming decisions cannot be overstated. Annual groundfish revenue in New Bedford is approximately $20 million. One species in the multi-species fishery, yellowtail flounder, is essential bycatch in New Bedford's scallop industry, which owes $400 million in direct annual revenue. A conservative multiplier for these fisheries, which takes into account the economic activity of their businesses, is 3. Conservatively speaking. Taken together, then, the groundfish and scallop fisheries account for nearly $1.3 billion in annual economic activity in New Bedford, which is roughly about 20% of GDP for the greater New Bedford area. Given these numbers, even if Congress appropriates $100 million in aid for the New England groundfish fishery, the forecasted cuts would assuredly deal a devastating blow to New Bedford and permanently eliminate hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs in the southeastern part of the state. The cuts would also likely trigger severe social dislocation, with fishing families losing their income streams and even their homes. The New Bedford fishing community wants to survive, as do the fishing communities elsewhere in New England. To a person, all of the fishermen with whom I have spoken have said they do not want handouts. They want to continue fishing. The forecasted cuts and their consequences would be painful enough for New Bedford's fishing community if the underlying science was beyond debate. But they are unacceptable in light of the growing lack of confidence in stock assessments, both among fishermen and scientists. Adding to that uncertainty and the lack of confidence, fishermen have repeatedly told the federal government, thus far to little avail, that the underlying surveys are conducted with the wrong types of vessels and gear and are therefore inherently inaccurate. Over the summer, scientists raised serious questions about the model used for Georgia's Tank Yellowtail for the Yellowtail Flounder stock assessment. Months earlier, the 2011 Gulf of Maine cod assessment, which showed a dramatic negative change from the 2008 assessment, with which you are all familiar, was called into question. And when the 2011 groundfish stock assessment updates were conducted, significant unexplained discrepancies ranging from 19% to 67% deviations in the estimate of stock biomass were noted for 7 stocks, all of which you are familiar with, ranging from Gulf of Maine, Yellowtail, the Georges Bank cod, as well as others. In my mind, these examples should give serious pause to the range of decision-making on ACLs contemplated by the council. I was pleased to see that at its August 24th meeting, the SSC discussed the concerns with Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder model, with the model itself, and decided to recommend a range of catch options up to 1,150 metric tons, which is the current FY 2012 catch limit for Yellowtail. By including this upper range of 1,150 metric tons for FY 2013, the SSC recognized the prudence of proceeding cautiously in the face of uncertainty in the underlying model and its impact on decisions of its decisions on fishing communities. In sum, I ask that you keep the economic and social ramifications at the forefront of your discussions, as is your charge under Magnuson-Stevens, and that you consider whether proposed measures that curb fishing are justified by the science. I also ask for your support of measures that would mitigate the consequences of any reduced ACLs. If the fisheries in New Bedford are shut down, they will not come back. The barriers to entry are simply too high, and foreign sellers who already supply 91% of our nation's seafood will fill the void. On behalf of the fishermen, their families, and the nearly 100,000 residents of the city of New Bedford who have a stake in your actions, I ask that you do all you can to keep New Bedford's fishermen fishing. Just one brief comment in the way of emphasis, if nothing else. There has been a great deal of publicity around the disaster declaration and the proposed appropriation of roughly $100 million to assist fishermen and their families and fishing communities like New Bedford. And I think that's all to the good, and there's no disputing that from where I sit. But there is a risk inherent in the declaration, and that's this. It's not the end of the story. We continue to have the same problem with proposed dramatic cuts that will put folks out of work and based on science that many reputable scientists consider to be dubious. It is the disaster declaration and the aid associated with it are often couched in terms that make it seem like disaster relief for the family farm, right? So this Congress for many years has been in the business of bailing out farmers in the Midwest, many family farms in the Midwest especially. And so there are folks, including people in high positions, who suggest this is all we're doing. We're taking care of the fishermen, and they will be all set. We just need to, you know, throw a little money their way. There is an inherent problem in that logic, and it's this: farmers get to continue to farm even after they receive disaster relief. Not so with fishermen, as you all know. There is sort of, if you remember the old grocery stores, not so old grocery stores that had the indoor and the outdoor. In the fishing industry, there's only the outdoor. Once people leave the industry, the reality is that they remain out of it, especially if they're boat owners. They move on. And we've seen this trend over time with people, especially in communities like New Bedford and Gloucester and others, where families who have been in the business for generations get out. And they stay out. That is just one reality of living in a fishing community and being in the fishing industry. So your decisions in that respect are permanent. And the reality is, too, that you can't unring the bell. Once they're out by and large. And so all the more reason to tread lightly, especially in the face of science that, even as I listened to the presentation this morning, is highly uncertain. There is no consensus, not even something close to a consensus, and the best available science is hardly the kind of science that we would make these kinds of momentous decisions on. Don't get me wrong, I get it. Your decision is not your decisions respecting groundfish ACLs are not easy. They are not easy decisions. But one of the charges, as I said earlier, is to consider the social and economic impact of your decisions on fishermen and the communities in which they live. And I'm here to tell you that the time is now to tread lightly, to not, especially in the face of science that has problems, because once you've made your decisions, they're permanent. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Anyone else? Judd.
Judd Crawford, Pew Environment Group. I have two, I hope, quick questions for Dr. Weinberg about the herring part of the stock assessment. We all, I think, know in this room that Atlantic herring are probably the most important forage species we have in the region. They're eaten by groundfish and tuna and all kinds of other things, including whales. The data that that you reviewed and that the Stock Assessment Committee and peer review team looked at that had to do with consumption showed, if you look at it through a coarse filter, a sort of a long-term steady upward trajectory, almost exponential, if you smooth that through, in consumption by predators. And I guess my question is, one question is, whether if we're successful in rebuilding groundfish and other stocks that are down from where we'd like to see them, for which we have programs in place, would we expect that the consumption would continue to rise on into the future? It would seem probable that it would, but I wondered if there was anything to be said about that from the stock assessment team and peer review. And the second question I have, I'll ask them and then leave you to respond. Is you also talked about several catch scenarios that the stock assessment team and peer review committee looked at. You talked about two of them. There are a number of them in the stock assessment report. The SSC memo that was released yesterday talks about a constant catch scenario of 114,000 metric tons over the next coming 3 years. I wonder if that's one of the ones that was considered by the stock assessment team and the SARP peer review panel. So if those are my two questions on the stock assessment. Thanks.
Thanks. I think the first question is one that's a complicated. It's not easy to answer that question because it would require making lots of assumptions about what different species are doing, and of course you know that they play different roles in the ecosystem, and so not all fish are alike. And of course there's the concern that a lot of people are aware of, if many different species come up near carrying capacity, what that will do. And of course then a lot of ecological interactions come into play, competition for resources and changes in distribution and so forth. So it's very difficult to answer your question specifically, but I think that going back to what the review panel concluded, they concluded that the high consumption that they're seeing currently is likely to continue in the future, and I don't think they were able to make it any more quantitative than that. Regarding the other question, I think that's getting into what the SSC has done, and I don't, off the top of my head, I'm not prepared to answer the question to compare what was done in the assessment relative to what projections have been done subsequently. It might be there, but I'm not sure.
Okay, thank you.
Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smallwoods, Fishery Survival Fund. I wonder if Dr. Jim could put up the yellowtail slide with the recruitment time series. That one's fine. What happened in the years of low yellowtail? What's the status of the biomass of dogfish and skates?
Well, that, again, I don't have the data in front of me, but I think you're looking for a particular answer, so maybe you would like to tell us.
This is the same point I made last winter, is that we need a major research effort to understand. I mean, just like Dave Goldfer pointed out last night, we're not single species management anymore. We need to be examining the competing species, I mean, the ones that eat the same prey and the predator-prey relationships, to try to understand what is happening. We're not going to understand it with a bunch of modelers in a room. So that's point one. I mean, I keep on saying that, but nothing is happening. And we're not going to make any progress until we understand that we need to be putting a lot more fishing effort onto dogfish and skates. So that's point one. Point two, which is I'm starting to get a little bit disturbed about, is the concept that the NIMS survey is no good because the gear is no good. We need to be doing side-by-sides. Been there, done that. The 40 years that I've been working on this, in the early 70s, when I was doing the gear work down at the Science Center, we were bringing on the URI 41 high-rise. When we changed the doors on a Yankee 36, the survey, we did side-by-sides. They don't answer the questions. I went and I looked at the 2011 survey on Georges Bank in the spring, compared it to stations that I had, and my personal view is the Bigelow is doing a fine job getting a representative sample of yellowtail. The problem is it's not doing enough stations. It's never done enough stations. In 40 years, time and time again, from McNaff years on, that's always been the problem. You cannot set quotas with the NIMS survey. It's inadequate. I would suggest that the Science Center find a couple of industry boats that could tow the same gear, and in the spring survey, get two more industry boats out there with scientific parties and triple the number of stations in the areas where you have yellowtail, both southern New England and Georges Bank. And if you want to go where you have the cod issues as well, and triple your stations and see how that impacts your accuracy and precision. What I see happening with yellowtail is that they're densing up. So it's a moving target. I could go to spots and get the same catch rates that I got 10 years ago and 15 years ago in my gear research, but it's harder to find those spots. So there's a difference in the distribution of the fish, and when you have a survey that has a very small number of stations, that's when you're going to have a lot of zeros and a few big hits, like we saw in the Canadian survey. There's other problems going on out there also with the larger yellowtail, with fertility, things like that, and certainly water temperature. What we learned in the scallop fishery, when we were going to area management, we needed more surveys. So we built up the RSA program. We have a significant amount of surveys. Right now, we have two scallop vessels out to sea today, the Liberty and the Celtic, with scientific parties from SMAS, VIMS, and Sea Farm Foundation on board doing comparison fishing of gear on our standard set of grid surveys for our bycatch project. That's the type of work that needs to be done in the ground fishery. NIMS needs to take a lead and get some industry boats out there, get a lot more stations occupied. It's the side-by-side comparisons or attacking the Bigelow gear is not the solution here.
Peter Shelley.
Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. Mr. Chair, members of the council, this is yet another extraordinarily discouraging assessment result on an important stock of fish. The way I look at the two scenarios, one basically is taking management off the table. There's nothing you can do because the environment, whether it's dogfish skates, pollution, sea temperature, who knows, is controlling the population and recruitment, and there's nothing you can do that's going to change that. The other scenario suggests that there are some management actions you could take that would help restore the stock. I'm not a scientist, but I suspect that the actual situation is somewhere in the middle, that there are environmental factors out there that are influencing this, and certainly the issues that Ron identified are very important to think about. But I also think there's some management actions. And, you know, this is sort of a classic Hobson choice between these two scenarios. You either have a choice in which it's no longer overfished, but guess what? There's never going to be southern mid-Atlantic yellowtail available to support fishing families or ports. The other one is that you're heavily overfished and you've got a long way to go to recover, and that you've got to take management actions that some of you don't seem willing to take. The second point I wanted to make from this is no matter which scenario, you are left with at least the best science advice at this point, which is you don't have many fish out there of the southern yellowtail flounder. And so the management action you can't duck is how are you going to allocate those fish? Yesterday, many of you were talking about the socio-cultural impacts of your decisions, and this is one of them. Who gets those scarce yellowtail, whether they're constrained by the environment or management failure up to this point? Who's going to get them? Which group of fishermen are most on these fish? And is this a bycatch fishery for scallopers? Is this something that will support inshore boats and small ports? That's a management action that you shouldn't duck. And from my perspective, you can't duck. Thank you.
Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the council. I'm going to read this thing. I'm Jeff Kalin with from Lund's Fisheries in Cape May, New Jersey. We've got about a dozen boats and 75 full-time people and a couple hundred people when our plant's operating. And I wanted to make a comment following up on Judge questions on herring, specifically on the constant catch scenario, which you'll hear about in a few minutes. From the SSC report, and it's we went to the working group meetings. I spent 2 or 3 weeks in Woods Hole during the herring assessment, and I really appreciate Dr. Weinberg and the other people at the centers allowing us to participate. We weren't at the table. We're not scientists. Judd was at the table. I think Steve Cadron was there for choir. So the issue's got a full vetting. But in fact, there were no constant catch scenarios that came out of the workshop. Recommendations. You'll see there was an F and MSY estimate, and that was about 165,000 tons potentially in FY or fishing year 2013. And then the PDT met, and they went back with a recommendation of the SSC to do 75% of MSY approach, and that would go down to about 135 or something in 2013. And we ask at the PDT whether or not, you know, what would be a constant catch approach so that we could have some predictability over the next 3 years in the herring fishery. And we were told initially that you had to take the lowest of the 3 years, in other words, the 2015 value, and fish that for 3 years. And frankly, that didn't really make any sense to me. And John DeRoba, who was the lead scientist during the assessment, took this seriously and went back and cranked out a constant catch scenario that gives us the same yields over the next 3 years. So it didn't happen during the assessment. It happened during the PDT and the SSC meetings where this approach was developed. And the result is, if this is where the council decides to go, we're going to leave 30,000 or 40,000 metric tons in the water in addition to a 25% buffer if we take 75% of MSY. So these yields are very conservative, we believe, and I think that's really how this evolved. And I wanted to just mention that to the council before you heard from Chris later. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. With respect to the herring, we've come out with what I regard is a very low biomass figure based on my experience. Now, my experience is primarily, my name is Owen Rochford from Norpal. I fished most of my life until I took this job. I fished on the east and west side of the Atlantic. I fished the Pacific and the Bering Sea. And even though I have a lot of faith in fishermen able to catch fish, they can't catch what isn't there. And to say that they can catch, 20% of the biomass, I think, is farcical, particularly with the fleet of boats we have here. I think that the biomass, because the data that they put in, they match their mathematical model, which is fine. I credit the guys with their nice structured mathematical model. But my problem is, my feeling is, like there's about four times as much fish out there, because when they tried to do an acoustical survey, they considered it noise. Well, as a fisherman, when we see noise on the sounder, believe it or not, that's fish. So I'm very, very worried about how they're collecting the data. When they do the spring and fall surveys, they use a bottom trawl to do it. Herring are a midwater fish, and it's like the scenario I put it like, it's like a blind squirrel finding an acorn from time to time. So these data points, like pinning the tail on the donkey when you look at the graph, the way it comes out. And I mean, the general public, or the donkey in this case, unfortunately, I have no faith at all in the data that went into these mathematical models. The same thing holds true when you look at the yellowtail. I mean, how can fishermen catch what isn't there? Realistically, it's impossible. Like, they can't. If a fishery is in decline and the fish are being overfished, basically, well, the chances of a fisherman catching them in the net are slim to nil, and they never seem to take that into account. The practical aspects are, when you're scalloping, you're catching scallops, and the gear is set to catch scallops. It's not set to catch yellowtail, which is a bycatch. But how can they catch more fish than what the council say is in the water? I mean, the data has to be flawed. I mean, unless we kind of relook at this again, the whole lot of the fishing community is going to be out of business. In the last 2 years alone, from the unyielding nature and a haddock bycatch, we've lost 6 boats, and I haven't had a fish go through the plant since the start of July as a result of boats being lost to the herring fishery. They have no faith anymore, in what's going on. The management structure is broken, guys, and it needs to be fixed. You need to analyze what you're doing, the sanctions placed on boats, how the science is used to analyze the biomass out there. Because my attitude as a commercial fisherman looking in from the outside, the system is totally broken. I mean, looking at the data, there shouldn't be any way in hell of catching a fish out in the ocean the way the data is coming out. Yet every time a fishing boat goes out, it can come back with oodles of fish, and the bycatch is what's going to kill it. Because obviously the figures are wrong, because the bycatch, again, is significant of the amount of fish in the ocean. So if you take it that a guy catches bycatch, you count that bycatch up. I mean, how can he catch more bycatch than the council says out in the ocean in the first place? It doesn't make any sense to me. Please review these figures very carefully before you start whacking quotas, because we won't have a fishing community left. Thank you.